Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And yesterday was the first day of training camp. Very excited to have basketball back and could hear all the sounds of the shoes squeaking on the floor. And I tried to get my, you know, flyby looks at it. I showed Darius the picture of my perspective from up top, and I could just barely, they're just barely out of sight, but certainly picked up on a lot, and the sounds of the gym, and Darvin's use of the clock and how he uses that to kind of shape his practices, just kind of getting these little itty bitty tidbits of what we're looking forward to in this season. But they started with a session in the film room, and I believe it was David McMenamin who asked, how do you watch film on a team that you actually don't have any film of? And Darvin mentioned that, like, I don't want to show Bucks tape because I'm a Laker now. And so what I would say, Mike, the impression that I got was that yesterday was kind of, you know, the first day of a class where the professor will give out the syllabus and this is what to expect. These are my non-negotiables, which was a phrase that really stood out to me. I think that's a great place to start. And I'd love to hear your perspective on that, Mike, from talking to all the guys in the media availability on just that opening session in the film room where they're kind of setting expectations for the year.
Yeah, this is something that is basically like a presentation from the head coach who's been thinking about it all summer. And how do I reach these guys? How do I bring everybody together on the same page? And it's the first time that Darvin has done it. So he's probably putting more thought into it than, you know, Greg Popovich as he comes back. And the message and the way that they're going to do things is either understood or you better get on board. And then he'll try to find another way to get to the team. And Darvin does like to use buzzwords at times. Like back in June, he told me that our three mantra words are going to be competitiveness, togetherness, and accountability. And then yesterday at the media session, he had like six or seven other words. And some of them, in fact, the alliteration was great on some of them. And some of them all started with the same letter, right? And so he's,
the defense was like contain, control, contest, I think, something like that. Yeah,
exactly. Stuff like that. And you mentioned that he didn't want to show a bunch of film. But so what he did, he had Drew Anthrop, who's a great, does a great job with the video coordination and putting together a lot of the film work. He had him basically put together slides that included some analytics from last season and sort of what they did, what they didn't do. Then I think some comparisons to the league, some aspirational type of statistics, and went through the slides like that while presenting in this way. And so I think that was essentially how we started camp and started practice. And then they get out on the floor and start to go through some of those things. And that's where you see Darvin's rectangles and squares. And part of that he got from working with Coach Bud. And they're above the break and in the corners and then on the baseline. And so all of this stuff is kind of, you know, just trying to get them off on the right foot. And it did sound, Darius, from not just what he was saying, but Toscano Anderson talked and Kendrick Nunn talked and Westbrook talked. I've never been to a first day practice where everyone's like, oh, that sucked. So you always have to take it for with a bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Everybody's always like, oh, the energy was really good. It went great. We got some stuff done. And they said the same stuff last year. So you have to then parse and you have to kind of feel if it was a little different. And that's the part that, you know, you have to have some more conversations with people about. But I do genuinely think that it was a good first day and that right now the boats, everybody's, the oars are rowing in the same way on the boat as they're trying to get on board with what Darvin is teaching.
Well, Mike, I thought Nunn's comments around the vibe being different from last year, like I do sort of take that at face value. And I think that there's a lot that goes into that, right? Like the makeup of the team and young players versus old players and veterans and a bunch of other stuff.
And I think it's true. I just, last year, the day after the first day, you just didn't hear anybody say otherwise, right? So it's informative for him to say that now, I guess.
Correct.
But yeah, but last year, the same type of stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's just like when you were saying what you were saying, Mike, it made me think of how every like news report that we get about an NBA player or any professional sports player in general, right, about a surgery, like, oh, so-and-so had a successful knee surgery yesterday. It's just like, yeah, it was successful because he came back with his knee, I guess.
Sure.
Like we don't know how successful it's actually going to be until, like, is he meeting his timelines and what does rehab look like and is there still pain, right?
Exactly,
Lonzo Ball had a successful.
I was going to say, sadly, that was Lonzo Ball's last surgery was apparently successful until it wasn't.
Yeah, and Robert Williams as well, right? He had a successful knee surgery right before the playoffs started. He played through it, and then now he's having another surgery, and it's sort of just like, yeah, well, we'll get him next time. But I will say that the guy I want to key in on here a little bit, and I want to kick this here to you, Pete, is Russell Westbrook. Like, Russ was one of the only – he was one of the three quote-unquote stars – right, to speak to the media yesterday after practice. LeBron did not speak. Anthony Davis did not speak, but Russell Westbrook did. And Russ was, and maybe this is more like how I remember it because of how last season went and towards the end of last season, sort of just the vibes and the vibe around Russ in general and what our general sort of perception of him is. But he seemed spirited in a good way. He seemed like he was ready to get after it, and that the buy-in, I will say, seems where you'd want it to be for any player, right? Forget the fact a player that has openly been on the trade market and yada yada yada, right? Now, I don't want to go too far down that road, but I do think that it's important, and this is both for you and Mike, Pete, but it is important that they get off on the right foot. It is important that the vibes are good and that the vibes are strong. Like, I was watching tape of DeAndre Ayton talk yesterday again, and it's just like, those look like proof of life videos. Like, I mean, we laugh, but it's just like, okay, bro, like, we get it. The vibe that you're giving off is like, when does my trade restriction lift? Oh, it lifts in January, whatever. Can't get here fast enough for DeAndre Ayton. Is the vibe that's being given off, whether that's intentional or not. And so it is important for a team like the Lakers, who sees the mountain in front of them and has lofty goals, but externally, the expectations are very low for this team. And I think that idea of where they're trying to go, they're only going to get there together.
Amen.
And we talked about that belief the other day. So I just wanted to kick it to you on just that general idea around Russ, because I think that he is symbolic in his own way around this idea of like, where are we going and what's the buy-in like? And very early, I think Ham has these guys, as most new coaches will, but like, I'm interested to see where that all goes.
We can't see what the future looks like in that respect. And early training camp is the most optimistic, right? It is the time of reworked jump shots over the summer and 15 pounds of muscle and all of this good energy. That's what happens most of the time, which is why the Phoenix situation, and there were a couple other places around the league where it's like, damn, like, and even we talked about our media day being a little bit subdued, but it certainly wasn't that, right? And I think that, what ours is like, at that point, what are we going to say, right? Like, what is Russ going to say about last year? And again, like, half the press conference on media day, half the questions were about, well, last year it was this way and it didn't work well at all, yada, yada, right? And so Russ, one of the things he mentioned was the energy of a new coach. And Kyle Goon asked him about the, you know, how you feel about the transition principles and the emphasis on running. That's what Darvin said they worked on yesterday and has been really something he's been preaching since day one is our defense. That's really what we focused on in the first practice, but then our running principles. And so Kyle asked, like, how do you feel about that? And Russ was beaming and, you know, he was really excited about it. And that could definitely go another way. And that could also be temporary, Mike. That's not something that those good vibes might not necessarily stay, but they also weren't guaranteed on day one. And so that idea of we're going to give this a shot in good faith and try to apply what Darvin is teaching us. I also think there's a certain degree of clarity that was communicated. JTA talked about this, about like how they communicated these are our expectations. This is what we expect us to do. And so all of that, like from the player's standpoint, is like, okay, I know what's expected of me. I know what you want me to do. And it, from Russ's standpoint, this is more geared toward what I do, the running and all of that. And so again, it's not the ideal circumstances. There's no way to get that on this current roster. But considering the circumstances, I think that we're off to a good start.
Darius mentioned the hostage video. And that was one training camp where apparently things were really poor in terms of energy and vibe. I heard various reports about Boston's media day as being difficult for understandable reasons.
Of course.
And then you hear about, you know, Brooklyn's and KD and Kyrie going through everything there. So for the Lakers to not even be in the top three of the most difficult media days with the realities of the offseason, it's interesting. But the way I think about all this stuff is there are levels to this to start a season. And the vibes that we're talking about that were pretty good on day one, they need to be cemented as the next days come. And yeah. So basically training camp, like the proof of concept of what Darvin's showing in the film room, then that goes onto the court. And then everybody feels like, oh, okay. Yeah. I can see how this works. Oh man. Wow. LeBron looks great. Okay. AD's in good shape. And you know, Russ seems to be bought in and that stuff. Oh, Kendrick Nunn's healthy. And you start to pull the positives and then you have a 5-on-5 scrimmage. And if the starters play really well and they kind of kick the ass of the second team, and then you get on to eventually to the first preseason game. And if those things don't translate at all, even just to that game, that's why it does matter. It's not the result. It's that the team has to go out there and not get their ass kicked by the starting five of whoever they're playing in the first. Because if they do, then all of a sudden you start the finger pointing internally, even not necessarily like to us about, well, hold on. Why we've been talking about how this is going to work great. And then it didn't. So to finish my soliloquy here, Boston, I think, is going to be fine because they have so much talent that all of the stuff that's happening now, once they get on the court in preseason, it's going to be like, oh, we've got a bunch of really good switchable players. We got go-to scorers. You know, Brooklyn, that's a little bit more of a we'll see, but they may end up being fine because of all the talent. Phoenix, that type of attitude and energy, that with Aiden and with Crowder not being there, like that to me is less likely to just be fine, right? Because of what they experienced last year. So all of these things going on at once, my point with the Lakers is that this week is important, but then what they actually put on the court when it matters is going to have increasing and exponential importance once the other teams start coming in.
There's no doubt, but what they do end up putting on the court is going to be based on what they do on every today from yesterday all the way through that first preseason game. These are all different checkpoints, right? And so that's part of my argument, D, of like today matters, and that you can look good in that preseason game in part as a function of the work that you do in that first week of training camp.
Yeah. So you guys know that I go run and I try to run like every morning as much as I can. And the app I listen to, like at the end, it'll tell you like, oh, you know, while everyone else is on the couch, like you got up and did your thing. And there's like 7 or 8 little things that they'll tell you, right, in order to keep you motivated, like at the end. Right. And one of the ones that they use is this idea of like, good job on your run or whatever. And like what you did today, you put that in the bank for the next day.
Yeah.
That's a key idea that both of you guys just brought up, right? It's like this does need to build on itself, and you do need to start to stack these things in a positive way. One of the things that I think back, and I'm going to go back to Russ here, is in his In his exit interview last season, he sort of revealed this idea that, like, he got off on the wrong foot with Frank very early in their process. And that wasn't something that he had spoken on really at any point during the season. And it was this implication. And, like, it was this implication that, well, I don't know where it all went wrong, but I remember I did this for him and I didn't really get that feedback. It was an interesting thought to me. That's just like, well, was this dude carrying this all year? Was this a thing that impacted him all season? And maybe it did and maybe it didn't, right? But if you wrong foot things very early in the process, it is very difficult to course correct as you continue to go down that that path. We talked a lot about that last season in terms of, like, okay, well, we want our rotation to be a certain way, but our big guys are all hurt, so let's start DeAndre Jordan. And we were kind of like, well, like, you're sort of wrong footing things here. Like it might be better to lean into this other thing that is probably going to be better. And back to this season, this is why I'm very interested in how meaningful, how real is this, the vibes, first of all. And if the vibes are real, how do you come back the next day and replicate that to put a little bit more in the bank, to put a little bit more in the bank? Because Mike is right. And you've said this before, Pete, the stink from last season doesn't get erased because you had good vibes on day one. You don't get that stink off of you until you start to show that the gains that you've made in this initial startup period are actually real, because it can be a house of cards. Like, oh, I remember when Dwight Howard in his first stint with the Lakers, and he had come off back surgery and he was supposed to not start the season until December. But meanwhile, the reports out of training camp, and Mike, you were there, the report out of training camp was, well, Dwight's kicking everyone's ass. Like, he looks great, but the dudes who he was beating up on weren't really NBA players, right? In terms of, like, the big dudes, right? And so that idea of all of these good vibes can go away if they go out there and play another good NBA team, and that good NBA team is just like, oh yeah, you know what? We're a good NBA team. You guys have lots of room to go to get to us. And that's where it's like, they need to build confidence in themselves now, because that's super important. And they need to build some of that belief now, but that belief better be reinforced when they start to see other teams, right? But it's just like one step at a time, right? And you can only control what you can control. And the vibe out of day one, and it's day one, and so I'm interested to see what day two and day three and day four looks like. But the vibe out of day one makes it feel like they did not wrong foot things. And that is one positive step in the right direction, and hopefully a little bit of change that they just put in the bank.
Yeah, so we're talking about two different things. And Coach Pete is doing the "it's all about today" mantra, which is absolutely true, which is Darvin's message, which is how they should be thinking. But then we, as the discussion point on this podcast, are trying to think, where is that going to lead to? And again, it's not that they're directly conflicting, but I'm saying that things could certainly be worse, right? Based on what the fit is, all of the issues that we've discussed, the lack of size on the wings, trying to integrate Russ again with LeBron and AD, all of that stuff that could be an issue once the season starts and other teams are scouting for it. But the way that their approach, the way that Darvin, I think, and then with the support of LeBron and company, are approaching things, gives them the best chance to mitigate some of those circumstances. It's just that it doesn't matter how good those vibes are if they're not able to execute the basketball parts of it as the season goes on. And that's where the whole, do you make a roster move at some point, comes into play. And these are the things that I'm battling against in my head as I'm sort of doing the day-to-day approach and sort of what they're trying to accomplish so that they can be the best version of the team that they have right now to start the season.
Yeah, there are multiple things that are always true and multiple forces kind of fighting itself. You always say, Mike, that I look at the game kind of through a coach's perspective. And I think that we can all look at it through a GM's perspective oftentimes, too. And I totally get the perspective of looking at this roster and being like, well, that's not a championship team, because it's not. It's also there are steps that can be taken between now and then that can get to that point. And I feel like our job and from the coach's perspective is to get to the point where we're a trade away from being a legit contender. And I do think that we can do that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this idea of having something in the bank because I think it's really important for a new team.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So you guys brought up Boston, San Antonio as places for different reasons that have enough continuity, that continuity is something that I think is one of the strongest things that you can have in the bank. And we really only have that with LeBron and AD. One of the themes of the comments from really both the exit interviews and then media day were this idea of we didn't get many reps with Russ. And so it's just kind of an incomplete. So there's not even really continuity there. And there are so many new players in the mix that I think that I'm really excited about the synergy between the coaching philosophies and the roster this year. And that was one of my big frustrations about last year. And one of the things is this,
you didn't think that lined up last year, Pete?
I know that shocks you, Mike. I know you, you must have been close to strangling me at multiple points of last year.
Like, Pete didn't say that on the pod last year.
Maybe once, maybe twice, like a couple of times, maybe in passing. We record so infrequently.
You
guys,
poor guys.
It's hard to remember exactly what's said and
that doesn't
not,
count
right?
The freaking paragraphs of detail over text. Thank you for
War and Peace messages from Pete over
so
here.
I was very frustrated with this last year, yes. And thank you guys for putting up with me. One of the things that I'm excited about with this year is that on both ends of the floor, at least the system that I think we're going to run, and more evidence comes out of that there's going to be a lot of similarities with Milwaukee, although our talent's different. I want to talk about at some point like the difference between a Damian Jones type of five and a Thomas Bryant type of five, although he's a little more similar versus like a Brook Lopez. But it's a very formulaic system on both ends of the court. And that's what I really want to kind of center the focus on is on the offensive end, the four out type of style with all of the boxes and whatnot. It's based on, and this is the high school, this is the offense that I ran in high school, was a four out drive and kick style of offense. And one of the things about it is wherever the ball is on the court, there is a read for every single player that's fairly simple. It's either I stay here or I kick up a position. And if you drive to the basket, you're going to fill opposite corner. Or there are different rules for doing that. And Darvin was talking about kind of the positionless nature of it. But the point is, it's very like simple basketball on both ends of the floor, but it's also pretty effective, right? Budenholzer's style in particular is effective in the regular season. His struggles have become more, aside from the championship year, of course, with adjusting, right, and kind of getting out of that system. And I'm curious what Darvin does with that. But I just want to throw that to you guys, that idea of when you lack so much continuity, I think that having something that's fairly simple and understandable schematically on both ends of the floor can kind of bridge some of that distance. So let's start with you, dude. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that when you've got this new group of people, kind of the role that the systems have within establishing a certain level of continuity.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I also think what's important is something that JTA mentioned, which was like, what's the sort of level of basketball intelligence of the players who are on the team, right? Because basketball, even at its most basic level for guys like us who have played at the park or whatever, or some level of high school ball or whatever, is that there is a feel for the game. There is a know what play to make and know what play not to make sort of feel. And the simpleness of like kick up a spot or drive and replace and where you locate yourself on the floor, and there's nice little boxes to sort of show you and align what the spacing principles are. And we're teaching running principles and principles, because these are things that are supposed to guide us in our ability to get to the places where then the simplicity of that then translates to, well, we know what we're doing in terms of how to play the game. And what JTA was talking about some, Mike, was that idea of, well, what I was impressed with, and I'm speaking from JTA's perspective here, is that like, well, there's all these smart guys who have been doing this a long time, and they know what it is to go and do that. And I think that's one of JTA's strengths as well, is he is a feel player, and he is someone, and it's one of the reasons why I think that he did well in Golden State, particularly when they were more barren on the wing and there weren't guys who were stacked in front of him, right? Is that he did figure out where his role was, and he did watch a bunch of tape on how to fit in with Steph and with Draymond and all of this other stuff. And so in Braun and in AD, and I think even with Russ and with Pat Bev, I think there's a lot of that detail oriented nature with these guys. Where I'm interested and where I have questions is that going to be the same in players 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9? Right? Like, are they all going to have that same feel? Because where it all works is where, and this is where Austin Reeves impressed me as well, right? Is like, he had a natural understanding of where to be, what play to make, like what pass to make with what hand, with all of this other stuff that is just like, okay, well, you get it. This is natural for you. And the more guys that the Lakers have, that's how you build continuity as well, Pete. It's just like, how smart are you? What's your feel level like? And I wrote about this at Silver Screen and Roll earlier this offseason, where it's just like, that's how you sort of build continuity where there isn't any as well. It's like these guys know how to play, and you put them all on the floor together and they can do it. And that's what the Lakers did in the championship season.
It's almost like
well.
Having fluency in the same language, even though you just met, you both speak a common language.
So two things here. One, I want to get to pick up hoops that Darius mentioned, and then also JTA expanding on that. But sometimes I'll be in a gym on the road and they'll have a court in there, and I might shoot to the side or something. And typically I'm at this point trying to avoid a real injury, so I won't play, but I'll look over, and 99% of the time it's just junk basketball. Like somebody dribbles down and takes a Steph Curry three, other team goes back, somebody wildly drives into the paint, right? There's not a lot of guys aren't sort of coming together when they don't, oh, who's got who. It's just very scrappy. But every once in a while, You'll see. You basically need two players. Okay? You need one player with the ball, and you need somebody else to just do something, whether setting a screen or making a cut. And so that's where the simple basketball, but just thinking a bit. If you have a couple of guys, and this is where I always think of LeBron James, and then maybe that second guy is Alex Caruso, right? Or, and this is the context in which I asked JTA. Okay, so you played with Steph. He's a different player, obviously, in terms of style than LeBron, but they're both going to attract the attention of a defense in a certain way. And the way that he broke it down was that he said early with Steph, he was just in his way all the time because Steph is already anticipating that the double team is coming and he's looking for that next action. And so JTA would get lost because he would try to go over, and then all he would end up doing is bringing his man over in Steph's area. So once it clicked for him, when he started to think about what that next movement should be, once the defense is going to react, and that's what he translated over into what he's going to try to do with LeBron. And he knows that teams are going to load up on LeBron. They're going to double. They're going to triple. They're going to clog the space. So where can he go? At what angle, once his man goes over, can he get to the basket with a back cut? At what angle can you set a screen a certain way? So this is the part where basketball is both simple. And if that's what Darvin's base is, Pete, that's where that can help you, because you need a couple guys that can think past the simpleness of it and then bring a little bit of complexity by reading the defense.
Just to stack on what Mike said there, that's what Coach Bud was talking about with the Bucks as well, is he said, we need to get more random in some of the stuff that we're doing, because we're almost too easy to guard now, right? And so we need guys to improvise off of what our principles are. And that's the next level of this that I think that you're talking about.
And this is kind of the downside of being formulaic. Again, this is an important thing to understand on both the defensive end and the offensive end, is that, like, it's very like basketball by numbers. Okay, if the ball is here, you do this. If the ball is there, you do that. And you have to establish that first. It's almost, you know, there's those saying that basketball is like jazz. And it's like, you need to know your scales before you can go off and, you know, play a natural note when it's supposed to be a sharp, you know, when you can go off the scale a little bit. You need that formal understanding underneath, Mike, of kind of the principles. And so that's what they're establishing at this point.
Well, and this has also been the unfair criticism of LeBron and LeBron teams and LeBron's offensive teams. And, well, they're not really running everything. They're just giving the ball to LeBron, and then he's figuring it out. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the point, because he knows how to do that. In the system, typically, take out like Golden State with Steph, a system offense. And this, again, criticism of Bud before they got to the evolution of that and what Giannis was able to do, was that you can, if you know what that other team is running, by game three in the playoff series, they're not running that anymore, because you're just not letting them and you're countering it. And that's when you have to have those actual playmakers that can figure stuff out. And that's what LeBron has shown he can do time after time.
That's true on the defensive end as well. I would argue that Grant Williams taking 17 threes is kind of the downside of being somewhat formulaic, in that they ran a ton of drop coverages. They were often very big. And the whole philosophy is like, we're going to let you shoot open jumpers. Well, Boston had a few guys that can hit some pull-up jumpers, Tatum especially. And so they had to send kind of more defensive assets toward, you know, in other places. And normally what you would do is switch or go into a kind of a different style, but they didn't really have that second pitch to go to. So these to me are more like 201 type of questions and things to address, D, like that idea of what we can build off of our base set, where we, how we can switch things up. But that establishment of our primary principles, and I think that goes all the way back to the film session that Darvin had with the team to start things out, is that we want to give up shots from here. We want to protect the paint. That's something that Darvin's talked about a lot and is big with this style of defense. We want to get out and run. And so I think that, I think that the fusion offensively between LeBron and this style of play is going to be one of the storylines of this year, is how do you fuse that, just give the ball to LeBron offense, which you should do, right, that Mike's talking about, with the way that this system works. So establishing just kind of like a baseline for all of that, I think, is where we are now. And then those other questions come down the line.
Yeah, and it's day one of camp. So, yes, there's going to be a lot of learning. There's going to be a lot of teaching. I thought JTA's comments about how he was pleasantly surprised and satisfied with how day one went, it's because guys do seem to get it. And getting it and then implementing that and then being able to translate that to actual five-on-five play, whether it's a scrimmage and then after a scrimmage, then against another team, that's all super important, right? And it goes to that idea of banking things away for you to be able to call on later. And that's what training camp is, right? And one of the reasons why I'm sort of looking at things that way is because it's going to be natural for us to continue to look at last season as sort of a baseline level, because that stink is still sort of associated with this team, even if that team is not this team, right? And I think that's going to be true, Mike, as long as Russ is on the roster, that there's going to be callback to that, because it's just sort of that muscle memory of being like, oh, well, these are the same dudes, when actually it's not. But the ability then to say, okay, well, we are starting new and this is fresh, and these are new principles, and we are building new habits, that's important for a new group. And it's going to be important for, I think, LeBron and AD to be the leaders in this, but also for all of the other guys that Coach Ham discussed. Like he said, Russ did have a good day, that Pat Bev did have a good day. I'll be interested to see how this dynamic potentially changes or shifts when Dennis Schroeder is in practice, because we talked about Walker and Troy Brown being limited, but Dennis wasn't there at all.
He's got visa stuff. He's got to get that cleared up. And so,
yeah. So when Dennis is there, I'm very interested to see how that changes as well. And that's a topic I want to go into a little bit later and more. But these dynamics are shifting and they're malleable and progress is not always linear. And there's a lot of stuff here that I think a lot of variables that are in the mix that are going to impact that path that this team travels.
I think it's always prudent to discuss LeBron first in some context, and then, you know, this year I find myself thinking more about Anthony Davis, and we talked about him a little bit the other day. And, you know, AD, there's a chance that AD's comments, right, it is actual presser, he was kind of slow playing things and he just kind of was putting that a certain way, and then he's going to come out a little bit like you guys were talking, because I heard that he was moving great and looked really good in that session. And so I want to allow for some upside still. As not that that's the one thing is going to sort of change what you would like to hear, right, as a Laker fan from afar, of this is the year I'm going to come in and dominate and try to be MVP. But so set the AD stuff aside for a second. Also heard that LeBron looked really fast. Now that was one of the words that was used to describe him.
Sweet.
Like, so year 20, he looks fast.
New shoes, Mike.
Yeah, the new shoes.
It's the new shoes.
He does look, so LeBron always looks huge in person, but he does look a little bit more sleek this year. And
I thought Russ looked like he's lost some weight too. Like, yeah, a little more sleek as well.
Also heard that, yeah, that Russ had some pop, although that, you know, that's never really been in question either, right, with Russ. But
sure.
So I'm just, the LeBron, it gets back to the whole discussion with LeBron is the sustainment of that type of energy and the legs and getting through the season, and how much is he going to play defense? And we've talked in the group thread, right, about how much you're going to have LeBron need to defend certain wings, and hopefully not until the last like 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, right, just to sort of save those miles and Darvish. So there's a lot going on with the team, but I'm still back to that point of, all right, well, how do LeBron and AD look? You know what? And just the fact that you have the try hard types around them, that is not something that they had last year. It's just not. It's not the type of guys that they had around them. And that recipe does not work. Right. But so I'm curious to see, just getting back to that alone, those two guys, and Pete, you've talked about this a lot, those two guys, and then everybody else just trying to do all of the dirty work. And if you could get Russ to get closer to being that type of a guy, even if the shot's not going in, those are the types of things I think where you can talk yourselves into things. And yes, it still has to get proven on the court, but that's the recipe, I think, for the early in the season.
Mike, there are like three different podcasts in your take right there, and one of which I think will be tomorrow's. Let's put LeBron in the center of the frame tomorrow and kind of talk about his upcoming season within the context of all the other stuff we've been talking about. And we'll do that here. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
line. Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.